This is the October 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. She's out of Hollister, Missouri. And Bill Biederman joins us from AgMarket.net. He is in Spring City, Tennessee. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willhe.org. On Thursday morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released both the monthly crop production report for October, which included corn and soybean numbers, along with an update of the WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. It now puts this year, or last year's carry-in, at 2.114 billion bushels for corn. Expects the harvested acreage to be 81.8 million acres with a yield of 168.4. That's up 0.2 of a bushel for a total production of 13.779 billion bushels and a carryout of 1.929 billion by the time the fall of 2020 arrives in a $3.80 cash price. The soybean numbers like this, the carry-in or the ending stocks for the crop we harvested last year, now at 913 million bushels. Harvested acres for this year, 75.6 million, the yield at 46.9 for a production of 3.55 billion bushels. Carryout for the 2019-2020 crop. By the time we get to the fall of next year, USDA says there should be about 460 million bushels left in storage across the United States. Cash price was raised. It's now $9 a bushel. I think Bill Biederman, I'll start with you from AgMarket.net. These numbers surprised the trade quite a bit. Why did the trade not have them dialed in?
Well, I think that in the corn situation, a lot of folks were raising the demand, the full 300 million to get the 5.6 billion feed use to get the old crop carryover down to the 2.114. But if you're using 5.6 billion, which they used, USDA used 5618 for feed use in the old crop, you would assume that the feed use would be a little bit bigger this year, given the fact that there's 2.5 million greater meat production on the books. And they didn't do that. I mean, USDA came in at 5.425. So, you know, there's literally a couple hundred million bushels right there that's missing on the books, and that I think was the biggest shock on that. Now on the supply side, USDA, when they set the acreage at 82, I believe FAS was saying 12.5 PP. Now we're at 19.5 PP for corn and beans, and they only shaved 200 off for both corn and beans, and the FAS numbers isn't everything that makes it up. So maybe there's a little bit more on the acreage that can come off. And then the yield number, most people were figuring the yield would come down about a bushel. And, you know, they didn't. I mean, USDA had their reasons. But one thing I will point out, when USDA did this survey, there was only 56% of the corn crop was not even in the dent stage. And in the soybeans, 45% of the crop, nearly 50, was not even in leaf drop yet. So maybe there's some more work to do.
So we have quite a bit of time left. When you take a look at that ethanol number that USDA released today, Brian Stark, what'd you make of it? I think it was down, 50 million bushels for the coming season.
I think that's in line. I think, obviously, given some of the new policies that were yet to be fully understood, I think has potential more impact to higher RIN versus more corn production. And I think, you know, lowering that, given some of the idling of the plants we saw at the end of the season, makes sense to me. Just to add on to what Bill said on the demand side, I think, you know, the trade was looking at supply adjustments and to a point of maybe not raising feed and residual, but I think the export pace, obviously being being really low for this time of the year is noted, but the USDA is generally slow to make those adjustments. And I don't think a lot of the trade felt like we'd cut $150 million off of the 1920 export demand this early in the game. So that automatically goes to the bottom line as well. So a little bit of a surprise given the stock number and the fact that we overestimated the rationing we thought we did back this summer, early summer coming out of planting, for us to maybe see some of those large demand cuts. Not that they weren't justified, maybe just the timing of the adjustments were a surprise on the corn.
Not incorporating the winter storm that's making its way into the Northwest, Brian, do you think that those numbers for both yield and acreage were close to right? I suppose the demand side as well.
I think the demand is probably fairly valued in our opinion today. I think you've made some adjustments based on, you know, where we see our current pace at. I think that's kind of the bullet the government, you know, put out today. If you get to the November crop report where you get more progression in corn harvest, to Bill's points about the lack of maturity, we're still probably leaning a little more on the yield modeling today with today's numbers. And with the storm up in the upper Northwest, there's going to be some portion of the crop that's going to be hurt by that, given its lack of stage of development. So I still think, and I've said all along, that the November crop report from NASS, I think, will have more weight as far as being more in tune with production than maybe we're used to seeing in the October numbers.
Jackie Vex, your assessment of the Thursday morning reports?
I guess I'm not surprised that they dropped exports by $150 million. Basically, when you're looking at the U.S. dollar, and the slow pace that we've been at, they normally are going to be on the more conservative side. And so on top of that, you know, if we would have not dropped exports at all, this could have been one of those reports that came in now with a higher number, and then all of a sudden they have to make the adjustments next month, you know, which really just destroys credibility completely. And so I think that because it was an October 1st, report, I felt it was pretty fair. When you looked at the acreage, you looked at everything else, I expect to see some big changes on this next report if this weather really does come through. And, you know, we're all focusing on the winter weather, but I think one of the things we have to focus on, too, is the amount of rain that a lot of the Corn Belt has gotten, 5-6 inches in some places. If we have heavy winds, we could have lodging like crazy. So there's a lot of things going on here in general. Yesterday, you and I talked, Todd, and I just did a quick assessment of what bushels were at risk in North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and I came up with 281 million corn bushels and 554 million bean bushels, and those 281 million corn bushels are corn that wasn't mature as of this last week, and the beans come from the harvested number, and so I think when you look at where we're at, we can expect a lot of changes, but the market wasn't ready for it. I think Bill hit it right on the head. They decided that this was going to all come down right now. It was everything was going to be adjusted, and here we are.
So what's left to happen now, Bill?
Well, I think, you know, as has been mentioned just now, you know, USDA has still got to address, you know, maybe some more adjustments to the harvested acreage number, because there's a big variance between that 7 million acre PP and this. But, you know, you can argue that one pretty well. The yield, I don't think anybody can argue. I'm guessing that everybody on this panel is hearing the same thing that I'm hearing, which is a 5 to 20 bushel less than last year. Soybean yield, hands down across the board. USDA is only 3.6 bushels below last year. So there's some adjustment to be made in yield. And let's just say they make some of that adjustment. If they just go from the 46.9 that they're at, and let's just say they go to 45.5, you're below 400. And that's if we lose another 30, 40 million bushel off demand. And that could be difficult to do, because if we get a Chinese deal, any sales made now to China is probably going to need a revision up on demand. And then jumping up into the corn, again, you know, I think, you know, we're going to have to find out, like Brian said, what this storm damage does. But if you just trim, you know, a bushel and a half to 2 bushels off this yield, you're going to be down to a 1.8 carryover. Now, eventually make your demand revisions of the 300 million that we just talked about. You're down to 1.5. You're going to be down to pushing a 10% stocks to use ratio. And in beans, you're going to be probably below 10% pretty easily.
Well, let's stay with the beans for just a second, Brian Stark. I'll come back to you because there was in the executive summary from USDA NASS, of course, the objective yield. And there was a summary of how many of the samples they were able to process this year. In the previous 4 years, 15, 16, 17, and 18, that number was in that 49 to 57% range, so relatively tight. This year, only 25% of the samples were able to go in to be processed for the objective yield. What does this tell you, given the late stage of the market and the season?
I think it goes along with what we've been seeing. You know, harvest is delayed because of the lack of maturity. It goes back to the spread out nature of planting, and none of those numbers are surprising. And I think that's why I've been saying that your October big report that we focus in on is so crucial every year for measuring production because of the FSA, because of the RMA acreage data coming together, more yield actual field results, from an objective survey standpoint, that's been pushed back, and now you're looking at the November report taking its place. So to me, along with what Jackie and Bill have said, there's a lot of things that could potentially change still, and beans obviously have gone from a billion bushel carryout here 8 to 9 months ago to now being potentially below 400 million, even without a huge boost in demand from China. So, we've potentially got a bean story developing, and could have one in corn as well as we go on.
Todd, I just want to add to that. They left the pod weights 4% above average. So, take 4% of the total crop size of 3550, and that kind of gives you another possible revision.
Right, and then you can also look at the corn objective numbers, and I did check on these with Lance Honig at USDA through the stat chat on Twitter. That happens for about an hour after each of the most recent reports as to whether the corn objective yield percent of samples processed in the lab meant that 22% of the samples were not able to go to lab because they were neither in the dent or the mature stage. So they were earlier than that. 49% were in dent stage and 29% were in mature. And he said, yeah, that's right. He also did send back a chart on Twitter as well as other places for people to get a look at to see how they use it. But still, Bill, you mentioned that early on. The corn crop remains really in mature.
Yeah, the corn crop was in Dakotas was 84% dent, which leaves 56. There was 0.56 million acres not in dent. And if you just take the North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, you're looking at 1.4 million acres there that wasn't in dent yet. So what kind of a yield loss do we have on that stuff? I mean, I know that the seed companies we work with, they're saying between 20 and 40% loss of that production. So it could be significant. The thing that scares me most about the North Dakota situation is the if they get the amount of snow is in the main producing area where it's forecasted, that snow could be deeper than the bean is tall.
Well, and I think you hit it right on the head, Bill. It's one of those things that if you have much experience with North and South Dakota, a lot of times when North Dakota gets the snow at this time of year, it doesn't go away. It isn't a situation where it just melts and you've added. And I looked at USDA. They raised the corn production for North Dakota by 9 million bushels. South Dakota, they dropped it by 21.8. So that extra 9 million bushels is sitting in there, too, and all at risk. I've just seen so many times when, the Dakotas are, it's a tough game, and North Dakota is very, very difficult to deal with in terms of an ability to harvest. I just wonder if they'll actually come out there and they'll actually harvest and bring anything in. When you looked at beans, on North Dakota. They dropped them by 3.5 million. They dropped South Dakota by 8.6. And so, you know, they're a little closer, I think, on beans. But when it comes to corn, it's a roll of the dice right now. To me, this is a September report, not an October report.
What percent of the crop would you guess could be lost in North Dakota?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think if you look at the, if they get snow and the beans are below the snow, I think you could probably lose 50%. There's some guys that'll sit and wait, you know, and spring will roll around someday, and they'll try and take things off. But I'll tell you, I don't hold a lot of hope if this storm really does do what they're saying it's going to do.
The other part of the storm are the freezing temperatures that it takes to get a snowfall. They don't have to be all that cold. However, the deepest cold, Brian Stark, should land in the northwestern part of Iowa, into Nebraska, and South Dakota. What do we hear about that part of the world? And I'm thinking in particular your elevators that run, I think, into that Nebraska area from Denison, Iowa, right into Omaha all the way to Kearney.
Right. I think the area in Kearney is fully along, at least from our contacts out there on the ground at our elevators. They feel good about the maturation of the local crop there. Denison, I think same way, because you're south of 80 in the southwest corner of the state. But for all intents and purposes, as far as that line drops down, it's going to end the growing season. And I think we've kind of talked about that here earlier, whether you're in North Dakota, South Dakota, northwest Iowa, northeast Nebraska, southwestern Minnesota. There's areas there that aren't fully mature that will have a growing season end whether you have snow or not, and that will have yield impact down the road, which is why I think there's a lot to this story to be played out, not just with that, but with the fully maturation of the crop and the other parts of the Corn Belt, given how far behind we really are in the growing season.
Well, I was going to have you turn and look the other direction eastward. What do we know about Indiana, Ohio, Michigan?
You know, from a standpoint of where we sit and our facilities through Ohio, Ohio obviously has a ways to go. Indiana, West Central Indiana, our facility in Clymers in Delphi, east of Lafayette, they're very comparable, at least from a progress standpoint for us. We've been focused on bean harvest. There's a lot of the corn crop that's still not dried down, still above 30%. It's mature, or close to maturity, but hasn't dried down. I don't think we have as big a risk as, say, some of the areas in Michigan and eastern Ohio where they may not be as fully along, but we don't have necessarily the cold risk that you'll see in the upper northwest today as of now. But we certainly need a later frost than normal, and first meteorological frost for our area here is around October 15th. And I think for the most part, you know, our area sits pretty good and shouldn't be stung too bad by that.
So I'm going to guess, and you can tell me whether this was the case, Brian, that most producers were looking at the price of corn earlier in the week. They were thinking they were getting ready to pull the trigger on some new crop corn sales and hadn't yet. How long are they going to have to wait?
I think they're going to probably have to wait to the November crop report. That's been kind of my bias. We've talked to growers for the last couple of weeks. We got close to the $4 futures level here this past week since the surprising numbers in the stocks report September 30th. Couldn't quite get over that hump. And I think right now, given the information today and the fact that we're not going to have more accurate information, in my opinion, until the November crop report, we might be stuck in a range between 380 and 390, you pick the number, until we see more information from the November report. So they're going to have to wait a while if they're hoping for a corn rally. Now, on the bean side, I think we've seen the ability. Bean basis is very firm, given the fact that there's large carries in the market today out to next summer. We've recommended to producers that if you've got available on-farm space, you should be considering beans in your space over corn, given the amount of carry. But at the same time, from a cash flow perspective, some growers aren't able to do that. So today you can clear $9 cash. And we've been kind of pushing that depending on your yields, because yields have been all over the board. But if you have good yields, $9 cash is a good sale after today's report. We might be able to be patient and wait for another 50 cents here down the road.
You expect basis to erode for either crop?
I don't. Given the fact that in our area it's highly variable, and you look east and how strong the end user basis has been, we've seen corn basis back away a little bit as they remain hand to mouth. That might continue to be the case in corn, but given the amount of carry and the lack of really big movement in soybeans, surprisingly enough, even without a big export program, the domestic basis has been pretty firm on beans, and I suspect that that'll remain the case with a disappointing bean yield that we've heard so far.
Bill Biederman, how did you get folks positioned, or how are you getting folks positioned for the growing, for the end of this growing season?
Well, we're about 55% sold on the old crop and comfortable sitting on that in corn. And on the we're actually looking at 2020. I mean, we don't mind holding on to ownership. Obviously, Brian was talking about how, you know, we can earn storage revenues on things. And some corn in some pockets we are selling, trying to get guys to sell and then re-own it on the board. But guys are really reluctant until they know what they have. But we're really interested in getting some 2020 sold. We've already got 10% sold. We're wanting to sell another 10%. Up around that 417 area. And, you know, I did some numbers for some guys. We can generate $70 to $100 an acre profit overall costs in those numbers, using those numbers. So I think that's a good place to get started. You know, you're above break even, and it probably won't be the worst sale, probably won't be the best sale. Hopefully it won't be the best sale.
And Jackie Vakes, your position.
Well, on old crop, we're probably about 75% sold and have the majority of the rest covered on with puts, basically. We've done quite a bit of 2020 corn and beans both, but we used option strategies where we went deeper in the money rather than something right at the money. I think that farmers are justified as far as not wanting to sell ahead, especially with the weather that's coming through, because, well, Brian knows, if we end this crop now because of frost, we're going to have light test weight corn. And you get crucified for that. And so, you know, if they can't deliver to bushels, that's a really bad situation. So we just keep talking to them. You know, they have been, they just don't know what to do, I think, is what it comes right down to. They've been whipsawed so much this year, and the expectations have been, you know, they expected this market was going to be through the roof by now, and now we're first coming into a time where we're starting to see what's happening. I anticipated that we were going to have good yields and decent yields on this early planted stuff. I think our really interesting times are coming as we get deeper into the crop over the next month or so. And so all you can do is continue to talk to them, try and help them figure out where their break-evens are, and it still ultimately is their decision. That's the part sometimes it's hard, you know, because you feel like it should be done, but if they don't want to do it, then nobody's going to do it.
Brian, and maybe you'll have advice for this, maybe you won't. I think there will be more than a few producers that will have bills that they need to pay. What do they do?
Ooh, that's a really great question. I think, you know, to me, I like the fact of being able to carry beans in space, but it's also the best commodity to generate cash flow. I'm friendly to both commodities, but maybe starting to slightly move a little more friendlier to soybeans, given what we're seeing, because even without a boost in demand, we're starting to ratchet down tighter. So, you know, if you could get to a point with these positive basis in the east, some of the processors, the ethanol plants, are still bidding 20 to 30 over the December. I think if you can clear $4 cash, that's not a bad sale. It doesn't have to mean you have to sell everything, but and the same thing with beans, you know, $9 cash if your yields are good. But, you know, corn's too early to figure out exactly what we have. We're starting to get a better picture in the last week to 10 days as bean harvest has progressed, that it's a case of the have and have nots. And the areas that didn't have rain are seeing really disappointing bean yields, and that's a little more challenging decision on what to price and sell for cash flow than the guys that are fortunate in the areas that did catch rain and the yields are fairly good compared to the past few years. So I think that's how you have to make that barometer in your decision. But look at your local basis levels. They're historically better than what we're used to seeing during harvest, at least on the corn end. And beans have gotten a lot better in the last 2 weeks as we've seen yields come down and the desire to really own beans into space.
Jackie Vicks, your version of this?
Well, I think that I've been friendly beans for quite a long time, and that's because of my bias as to what's going on down in South America. And I think that China's going to have to come to the table because they can't be guaranteed they're going to get what they want out of South America. And my bias is I would rather store beans if I could, but most guys don't have the ability to do it. And so I think re-ownership is definitely something you have to do if you're going to sell beans across the scale. There's no two ways about that. I thought it was interesting on the USDA report that they dropped Illinois almost 20 million bushels on bean production. And that's really a significant number. You know, on corn they dropped 46 million. So it's telling me that what they're seeing in the fields isn't as great as we might think either. So I think I'm very friendly beans, and I guess neutral to friendly on corn. I think corn has got a ways to go. And primarily because of the U.S. dollar. I think that's going to be the biggest dog that's keeping us down.
And Bill Biederman, what do farmers do if they need to make sales to pay bills?
Good question. I mean, I honestly think that there's pockets in this country where basis is very good, and if we get the kind of rallies that it seems to be that we're all in agreement that should occur, that basis will back off as movement starts to pick up. So I think getting some basis put on and maybe even delivering on that is not a bad idea. That would generate some cash flow. But I agree with both of you that if you do move some stuff, you're given the environment we're in and the type of revisions that we expect and the type of revisions that we in the country who farm really know are have to happen at some point, re-ownership is a good idea.
And let's get a final word from each of you. I think I'll start, Brian Stark, with you from the Andersons here in Champaign County.
As things pick up in the country, I just want to remind our listeners to make sure we're safe and we continue to be cognizant of slow-moving vehicles and try and stay rested up during these long hour seasons.
Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri.
Yeah, harvest is difficult every single year. I guess the thing that I'd like to convey is that remember one thing, you know, that the futures market is just that. It's a futures market. And when there's not a lot of information out there to feed the bull, it's very easy for the market to go down. That's not necessarily a reflection of what's going to happen in the long term. So try not to get emotionally drained, especially as you head into harvest.
And Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net. You're out of course, Spring City, Tennessee.
Well, I think it's going to be really important this year that as you're getting into your fields to keep recalculating break even and watching, you know, how your cash sales fall with that. If you get opportunity to take some profit off the table, don't be afraid to do that. But for sure, while we're hoping for this and expecting the old crop fundamentals to become more bullish and we see some lift in the market, definitely allow that. But at the same time, don't pass up the opportunity to lock up $70 to $120 an acre on 2020. I mean, it's just a hedge. It's just good business sense. So a little friendly on the old. Not so friendly on the new with 19 million acres of PP out there that could come back to haunt us next year.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the programming anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to Bill Biederman, Jackie Vakes, and Brian Stark for joining us on this edition for October the 10th. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.